I'm here with Mikey Dynan. This is actually our first interview podcast in our whole series, which we pray will exist and it will be a series one day across the years. And Mikey, you're a member of Reforming and involved in the ministry of members at Reforming because you serve there, often ministering to others. But firstly, can I ask you, what do you do for fun?
Thanks for having me. Great to be the first guest on the podcast. Well, for fun, I definitely love spending time with family and friends. Got the two young kids, Lawson 6 and Patty's 4, and my wife Wendy, and love spending time with them and our wider church family, and love spending time with friends. Really enjoy sport, watching sport, be it local sport or sport on TV, and got a passion for trains as well.
Wonderful. That's a wide-ranging set of passions there, Mikey. And because on this podcast, our listeners can't see, but you're currently wearing a shirt that has a lion holding some sort of a trophy, wearing skates. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so there was a saying when the lions were down and out, well, we were looking like we could be down on down and out during the season. If you're walking on thin ice, you may as well dance. So, and the Lions this year danced on thin ice and danced all the way to the premiership. And it's made from some guys at the Raw Deal podcast. They got it arranged, which is the Brisbane Lions podcast. So, yeah, they arranged some premiership merchandise. So I got on that.
Well, it's great to see you're enjoying that. And we actually have something down the pipeline. We might include an episode on Christianity in sports. And I thought a lot about that. And that is one of your passions. And we'll get to that in a moment. But at church, what specific roles are you involved in at Reforming Church as a member there?
I've done different things over the years, but my two main things at the moment, on the welcoming team, so welcoming people to church, giving them service sheets and a big smile when they walk in, and obviously welcoming is after church as well, not just before church, and also on the evangelism team. So we're focused on what happens outside of our four walls to spread the gospel.
Terrific, Mikey. And for you, you're a passionate kind of guy. So you're an all-in. You love your sport. I hear rumors about there's some sort of a rugby league team kind of thing. And, you know, we're in Victoria. So that's a growing interest in sport. You have passions in a wide variety of areas. Tell us about what are your passions and prayers?
Definitely number one passion is Jesus, letting people know about him, making Jesus famous, as some say. And really getting the word out there. And through this comes what we're going to be talking about today, Australian history, which is something I even enjoyed back in high school other than sport. It was my favourite subject. Unfortunately, we didn't do very much of it in high school, but when we did, I loved it. And since I became a Christian, I've been very interested in finding out more about the history of Christianity in Australia.
Yeah, wonderful. So you didn't grow up in a Christian home. And I think that's right. And so you became a Christian. And becoming a Christian meant that you become passionate about Australian Christian history. And as we just heard, it started in those young years for you. As you've been passionate about Australian Christian history, what have you found has really taken your interest? What sort of things about Christian history or people about Christian history has taken your interest?
Well, I mean, it's interesting to look what's happened in Christian history over the 250 nearly years since British settlement happened in Australia. And look, there's a lot of controversy about what happened back in 1788, but, you know, was it all bad? You know, I mean, there's no argument that some Christians throughout Australian history have done things they shouldn't have done and done things that God wouldn't be proud of. But, you know, I wanted to look at, is it all bad? And is there some people through history we can really look at and say, well, even back in those early days, you did a really amazing job. And I think if we start with Richard Johnson, who was on the First Fleet, it's really good to talk about him. So Richard Johnson was on the First Fleet as chaplain, and he was sent out by two very influential Christians of the day. John Newton, you know the hymn Amazing Grace. I think even non-Christians know that one. And William Wilberforce, who in the end, he abolished slavery. And it was his Christianity that led him to do that. So let's have a look. Did this guy, Richard Johnson, did he come out there to kill Aboriginals, or what was his attitude towards his Aboriginal people? And we actually find that if we look at history, he was very positive, and he was very big on that all men and women are created in the image of God. And that didn't just mean white men.
Yeah, so I love what you said there, Mikey, because I think it's helpful for us as Christians to be honest about history. Christians, of all people, we want history to be examined. We want people to look into things and to see what is the truth, and that we're unafraid to say that with the good, there has been the bad. And I think I've heard you say that a few times. And as we look into that and we're honest about that, we can see what is the bad and what is the good. And we can actually see what is reality, because it's often the case that years later, we make assumptions about people. We make assumptions about someone like Richard Johnson and his attitudes, but we actually need to look into the man, look into the person and the history, and to see what's really. Now, Richard Johnson, he comes with that first fleet. He comes to what is now Sydney Town, Sydney City. And of course, it wasn't a city at that stage. He comes to serve that colony and to preach the gospel. There's a psalm that he preaches. It's that first sermon. I've heard you talk about this. Tell us a bit about that and what we know about the first sermon.
Yeah, sure. So Psalm 116, verse 12. But just to go back a step, word has it, and we don't know quite whether this is truth or legend, but you can imagine it being truth. When they first go to Richard Johnson, when Wilberforce and Newton say, we want you to go to what is known back then as the end of the earth, and, you know, you're going to start civilization there, as they believed it to be back then, and we want you to go there as a missionary. His first reaction is believed to be something along the lines, maybe not these exact words, but that is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. But then he thinks about it and he prays about it and he says, hang on, maybe this is actually a really good idea. So, yeah, he goes out there on the first fleet, and the 3rd of February 1788 is the first sermon in Australia. And, it is Psalm 116, verse 12.
That's a great verse. So Psalm 116, verse 12, what shall I render to the Lord for all his benefits to me? You could imagine Richard Johnson and his family, there they've come to this place, which is so foreign to them, and would have been a hard trip. So here he is thinking, you know, what has happened? What have they done? But they've also realized, what shall I render to the Lord for all his benefits to me? He preaches a verse on thankfulness to God for carrying them through and bringing them to this place. And this is what the people need to hear of this colony. And as he preaches there, that first sermon on February 3rd, 1788. Now, Mikey, as he does that and he preaches that sermon, and he would have had conflicting thoughts about going on this trip, but he goes with the support of others from back in England. Tell us about how you feel about hearing that story. What does it mean for you that you live in this place now where that first sermon was preached? As you think about Australian Christian history, how does that stir a passion in you for thinking about those that need to hear about this God who has given us so many benefits in this place?
Well, it's interesting. Like, whatever you think about colonization, we came to this land and, you know, there were Aboriginal people there, but, you know, the gospel is for everyone in the world. I mean, I know some people say it's a white man's religion. Well, firstly, that's flawed because we follow someone who wasn't white by following the Christian religion. But I mean, it's not a white man's religion. I mean, Christianity was in Africa long before white men were in Africa. So, you know, these Aboriginal people needed to hear the gospel. And it sounds like Richard Johnson was pretty much the nicest person from the first fleet to them. It's also interesting to look at what Governor Arthur Phillip saw as his role, basically was the morality police. Obviously, Johnson saw his role as an evangelist very much by going out into Australia, but Johnson was somewhat supportive, but very much you hear it for morals and that sort of thing. But it gets worse when Governor Phillip is replaced by temporary Governor Groves, Francis Groves. He is very hostile towards Johnson and basically says, all right, church has to be at 6 a.m. It can only go for 45 minutes. You can't have a large bell. You can have a very little bell that you can't even hear 100 meters away. So things get really hostile. The government haven't even paid church to be built. So Richard Johnson goes and builds a church himself. So this guy, and you'd love this, he's also a farmer, Richard, and a very good farmer. So you love that as well. Builds his own church, which is later burned down. But by 1800, he's going back. And he sees himself as somewhat of a failure. But I think the fact that we're still talking about him nearly 250 years later, he's very much not a failure. The other thing, just back on his relationships with Aboriginals, he fostered an Aboriginal girl and helped her when she had smallpox. It was definitely a good relationship because she, even when she was an adult, frequently went back and visited them. He gave his daughter an Aboriginal name. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal today. It wouldn't be. But think about this. This is 1792. His daughter was born. To give her an Aboriginal name back then, I'm sure there would have been plenty of sniggers and comments, if not to his face, definitely behind his back about that.
So he went through a lot of hardships. And as you say, he's gone back and feels like a failure. One of the things for us, even in contemporary society as Christians, we can often feel like, oh, it's failed, it's not working. But this is what history helps us with. History shows us there have been people gone before who have really challenged the status quo. And it actually helps us to remember that what shall we render to the Lord for all his benefits, that the Lord is with us. And he used Richard Johnson in such encouraging, powerful ways, even though he feels his own weakness. It's fascinating to hear that, how he actually intentionally was an evangelist, where you've got Groves, that acting governor, who was against him and pretty much did anything he could to make it harder. It was already hard enough for Richard Johnson, but to make it harder. Church at 6 a.m.
Imagine if we did that today.
It's just to make it harder for him, and so he has to build his own building and all that sort of thing. And of course, then you've got that peer societal pressure of just do the moral stuff. But of course, as you said, he's an evangelist, so he wants to be about the evangel, wants to be about the gospel going out to that colony. And I love that you mentioned that he is a farmer.
And to have more strings to his bow, he opened the first schools in Australia as well, and was very much that education is for everyone, so it didn't matter whether you're kids of convicts, free settlers, you know, white, black, whatever, you know, education, everyone. And he's very well regarded because, look, and there are mixed views, but the second chaplain to Australia, Samuel Marsden, there are very mixed views on him and probably mostly negative. Well, I would say definitely mostly negative. He was influential, and some people say he gets a bad rap when he shouldn't. And I mean, I'd love to do a bit more digging on him some point. Definitely Richard Johnson still is very well regarded, more so than Marsden.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So as you've looked into Australian Christian history, you kind of make these connections, and there's many trails to walk down, isn't there? So you go from Johnson to Marsden, you look at the context of Governor Phillips, and then the acting Governor Groves, and there's so many things to look into that probably we haven't, even as Christians, we haven't really looked into a lot or talked about a lot. I'm going to guess, Mikey, that there'd be a fair few people at Reforming that have never heard of these things, which is so good that we're talking about it. And I think it'd be good to keep talking about it and into the future and do more episodes like this and follow some of those trails. One of the things, as we look at Richard Johnson, and you've mentioned this a few times, his own intentional ministry towards the Indigenous people of that area, his own passion for seeing them hear about Jesus, his intentionality in seeing them involved as part of the community of also hearing the gospel. As we talk about Johnson and that beginning of that ministry, that is something that as we come to Australia Day, as we think about this as a nation, as the church does, as Christians do, we want to think about how we understand that and what we would want to carry on in that ministry. Now, as we do that, Mikey, this is one of those things where history can become foggy for us. People have different views. There are different takes. And often it's good to actually listen to the people who were there and what they did. This might be a good way in which we talk about what happened next and what you know about what happened next and the people of what happened next. Going from Johnson, what happened next in terms of ministering to the Indigenous Australians of that time and in the next generations? You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it's been a real roller coaster for where Christianity's been in Australia. There's been, as we said at the start, a lot of good and a lot of bad. And if we fast forward to the, you know, well into the 1800s, well, you know, Aboriginals are killed and, you know, things are not good. But that's where I get to the next person I want to talk about, which is a man called Daniel Matthews. And he actually lived right here in Bendigo at one point. Yeah, but wow. Most of his work was done around the Murray River. Now, you've got to remember in the 1800s, Echuca was a very busy place. It was at one point the third busiest port in Australia behind Melbourne and Sydney. And so he had land around the Echuca area. Now, he then found that that land was on a sacred Aboriginal site. And I should point out that we're talking about a layman of the church, you know, where he, to our knowledge, and we don't know a heap about Daniel Matthews, definitely though a lot more about the two other men we're talking about today, but he didn't hold any position within the church, but he was definitely solid in his faith. So he finds out that he's on a sacred site and he says, all right, I'm going to give a large proportion of this land back to you. You can fish here. When you don't have fish, you can come to me for a meal. And he actually makes it, because when the Aboriginals are on your land, safe. And his land becomes a safe hub for Aboriginals right throughout Victoria and New South Wales, being on the border. Through all this, he's not very well regarded by other people because of what he's done to help the Aboriginal people out. Even his brother, who he ran a business for in Echuca, ran a business within Echuca, giving food and provisions to the rivermen and all those around the Echuca area. His brother's getting frustrated because he's spending so much time on his land as a missionary to these Aboriginal people. Mm. Journalists come up and write stories about him, and they're not kind stories to him at all, but it was his faith in Christ that says, you know, this isn't right. Why are their people? Why are we killing them all, displacing them from their land? So he's given most of his land back to them, and he's cared for them.
Mm. That's an inspirational story. I love how that he wasn't an official leader or a title in the church as a Christian. I think it goes back to something we're passionate about, the ministry of members, the ministry of just realizing that the church doesn't have to have those leaders be the ones that are taking all the initiative or running all the ministry or actually thinking about how we're reaching the lost, loving the lost. I love that. This is a man who was, by his Christian convictions, how do we love these people? And do this first. That's very encouraging for us. Tell us the work of Matthews and others. What is the fruit of that we see today that you've seen and heard around? What is the fruit of that gospel going to Indigenous Australians?
Yeah, Russ, it's interesting. So if we look at statistics today, the general population versus the Aboriginal population as to Christianity in Australia, Aboriginals are higher than the general population. So, you know, again, for those people that say, you know, it's a white man's religion, well, there's, you know, a higher percentage of Aboriginal Christian than white men by about, well, 3 or 4% over the whole population. So, you know, maybe that makes it a little bit higher than white people. And obviously we've got new immigrants coming here in large proportions, Christians from places like Asia and Africa, if we're serious and honest.
Yeah. I think that we often assume the assumption is in the West or in the Anglo world, the assumption is, oh, Christianity is a white man's kind of religion. But the beauty of Christianity is it doesn't depend upon ethnicity. It doesn't depend upon a location. Christianity is the message of Jesus who has come for all people. And that historic assumption is not quite right. As you pointed out, the stats, in fact, there'll be more people around the world that are not of that Anglo origin than are Christians, and it's exploding around the world. But even in Australia, that there is a high proportion of Indigenous people that are believers in Jesus.
And even in our own denomination, my understanding is the majority of Presbyterians in the world are Asian, not white.
And so, Mike, as we've heard about Matthews, we've really done this survey as we're listening to you, where we've started with Johnson, and we've gone to Matthews, and we see now he's been involved in reaching those who are made in the image of God, who are here before the first fleet arrived, and we've seen the gospel go to them. And that's been so encouraging to hear about. On this episode, you've got a third person you'd love to hear about. Who's that?
That's John Flynn. John Flynn was actually born just west of Bendigo, actually, about 45 minutes to the west of Bendigo, sort of near Denali. So he grows up as a Christian and he goes to Bible college. He's not very well regarded at Bible college. So we've got a saying in footy, if an umpire's hopeless, you'll be in the bush next week. And that's okay. Kind of a bit like what happened to John Flynn. Yeah. They say, you're not well regarded. We'll send you to the bush.
And so that was an assumption that you'd be forgotten and have no impact because you're just out in the bush. What can you do amongst a bunch of trees? But what happens for John Flynn that he becomes quite influential?
Yeah, well, I mean, initially he ministers in small towns around the Gippsland area. Then he is quite a thinker, and he's sort of thinking about, well, he spends time in South Australia, in the Northern Territory. He's thinking about this big land, and he actually gets a letter from someone during World War One. This big land is actually great for flying because there's not many mountains, but we need to reach people in remote areas. So he comes up with air ambulances as an idea, and he becomes the founder of the Royal Flying Doctor Service. And back then he also surrounds himself with people that can also help with the communication side of things, because it's not like you could just pick up the phone back then or get on Twitter or whatever you want to call it. Communication's an issue. So he surrounds himself with some really good people and starts the Flying Doctor Service, which has become huge today. Nowadays, they even help out with things like mental health support and coming in. They fly dentists out to remote areas, and it's become amazing. And that's all come about because of John Flynn. And I should add, if you don't know who John Flynn is, I know not as many of us carry cash as much as we used to these days. If you've got a $20 note, pull it out, look at the guy on there. That's John Flynn. And it's really his Christian faith that's led him to doing all this stuff. So not bad for a bloke that they thought was no good at Bible college.
Yeah, there you go. Isn't that wonderful how the Lord uses the weak ones or the unassuming? He doesn't take people with title. You don't have to have title or position or that kind of authority in the church to go out and serve in Christ's mission. We've got people from Richard Johnson. We've got Matthews, who wasn't a person of title. And then we've got John Flynn, who not only was someone they thought, well, you're not going to do well here at Bible College, send him to the bush, ends up starting the Royal Flying Doctor Service, and also is used by the Lord to be involved in other ministries too. So we know that we are in a Presbyterian church, and the Presbyterian Inland Mission would see John Flynn as one of its founders, as one of those people who saw not only the physical needs of those that live in Outback Australia, but the spiritual needs of them to hear the gospel. So, Mikey, as we talk about these people, I've just loved having you on our first interview. We're going to have you back, actually, in the future. There's lots of other passions that we'd love to hear you speak on. But as we wrap up, I've got a question for you. How has this made you feel about Christianity in Australia into the future? So we've talked about Australian Christian history. We talked about Johnson and Matthews and Flynn. But that's our history. And, you know, we reflect upon our history. We come to things like Australia Day. We reflect upon the history of our nation. We come to things like Anzac Day. We reflect upon our military history. But as we reflect upon our spiritual history, how do you feel about Christianity in Australia going into the future?
I'm optimistic about it, with an asterisk. Look, a lot of people are very doom and gloom, and sometimes Christians ourselves are very doom and gloom about where it's at in Australia. And definitely some of our opponents are, they're sort of trying to, they believe, kick us while we're down. Look, I believe if you look at Christianity in the history in Australia, it's gone in waves. It hasn't been linear at all. So, and I think we're getting to the stage we're going to see an upward curve. Now, doesn't mean a revival's going to look like Billy Graham in the 1950s, the MCG. Revival is probably going to look very different in the 2020s or 2030s, whenever down the track it is. I definitely think, you know, there might be a lot of people who aren't going to church. You're not running into a lot of hardened atheists around there. People are just like, oh, I haven't really considered it, or it's in the too hard basket. So I believe there's opportunity there, but the asterisk is, and I'd sum it up to some of the three people we're talking about. We need church leaders and preachers like Johnson. We need to open our homes like Matthews, and we need to go out into the world like that.
Wow, I love that. I love summaries like that that help us to connect and hold onto those hooks that help us remember that. History teaches us things. History inspires us, and history helps us when it does feel like we are being kicked when we're down a little bit in this time and place. So if you can actually give us that phrase again, Mikey, because that's so helpful as a wrap up. that what we see from Christianity in Australia helps us going into the future is this.
We need church leaders like Bridget Johnson. We need to open our home like Daniel Matthews. And we need to go out into the world to all corners like John Flynn.
Wonderful. That's so helpful. Praise the Lord. What shall I render? What shall we render to the Lord for all his benefits to me? And it's so great to be speaking with you today, Mikey. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Russ.